people that have run from one side of Africa to the other side of Africa nonstop. We've had millionaires. We've had number one selling authors. We've had people that have kayaked down the coast on an epic journey. It's just an endless. I'm going to call it a parade of extraordinary people. And what they're helping us explore is what creates success, what creates a life of abundance, of adventure, of fulfillment, of personal power, a life of resilience, happiness, a magnificent life. So I would like to give special credit to those who do show up to these calls week after week because of their true dedication to personal growth. And I will say this as I am so anxious to get to our guests now. Life Path Unlimited was founded on the belief that you have the power to shape your destiny, your life, as you desire. You are that powerful. And here on these calls, we continuously learn more and more about how and why we are each that powerful. With that said, very honored and excited to introduce you to our guest today, somebody that I'm absolutely fascinated with this man's work. Our special guest today is Christian DeQuincy. And now let me tell you a little bit about Christian. Right. Christian leads people into mind-spinning adventure, into the deepest mystery of self and soul, matter and mind, time and space. He draws on insights from philosophy, quantum physics, Buddhist metaphysics, and he shows you how reality bubbles into being at every moment with the spark of your consciousness. Now, brass tacks, he's a professor of philosophy at the prestigious John F. K. University, where he teaches philosophy and consciousness studies. His books include the award-winning Radical Nature, subtitled Rediscovering the Soul of Matter, and the book Radical Knowing, Understanding Consciousness Through Relationships, and Consciousness from Zombies to Angels, which I hold in my hand today, a truly, truly amazing book, and Deep Spirit, Cracking the Noetic Code. He is also co-author with the extraordinary Willis Harmon of the Scientific Exploration of Consciousness. He holds a doctorate in philosophy and religion from the California Institute of Integral Studies, another very prestigious university, and a master's degree in consciousness studies from JFK University. I think you're on the same page as me now. We have something to learn from Dr. DeQuincy. Good morning, Christian. How are you?
Good morning. It's so wonderful to be on this call and to have heard such a wonderful burst of enthusiasm as people were calling in. So I'm delighted to be here.
Well, I can tell you from what I know about our community, too, that you have a call packed with people delighted and ready to soak in your studies. And I truly am grateful that you've come to the call. And I hold in your book, From Consciousness from Zombies to Angels, The Shadow and the Light of Knowing Who You Are, 7 Steps to Greater Self-Awareness. And I have all your books, Christian, and the one that I chose for this call was this book because this is very, very much what Life Path Unlimited is about. So I kind of wanted to dive into a question right away, to just jump right into the deep end of the pool, if you don't mind.
Mm-hmm.
Joseph Campbell said at one place in one point of time, he actually said, There are three ways of getting to know, and I forget what word he used, but basically he said there are three ways of getting to know this higher intelligence, amazing something on the other side of the veil. And he said it's been known that the three ways are: one is being, two is to follow your bliss, as Joseph Campbell was very enchanted with. And the third way, he said, was through consciousness. Now, Joseph Campbell actually said, I don't know really much about how to dive into the being side, and I don't know what consciousness is, therefore I lead with follow your bliss. So I get to put the question to you. What is consciousness?
Okay, so begin with the little easy question.
That's what I meant. What is consciousness? Well, and apparently you've made it your life work.
Yes, I have. So I can respond very simply. Consciousness is the ability to know and to choose. That's it in the simplest bumper sticker. If you have the ability to know anything, to feel something, and to make choices, then you are a conscious being. And anything, anywhere in the universe that has the ability to know, to feel, and to make choices is conscious. And in my work, I happen to take the position that consciousness goes all the way down, that there is no level of reality that does not have the ability to be aware, to know, to feel, and to make choices. And so consciousness is actually pervasive at every level of being. So you and I are conscious, but every cell in our body has consciousness, and every molecule in every cell, and every atom in every molecule, and all the way down to the quarks and quanta that make up the subatomic particles. There's some trace of ability to know, to feel, and to make choices happening at every level. So simply, consciousness is the ability that the universe has to know and to make choices. It's what guides the unfolding of events in the world that we call evolution.
Now, are you going so far as to say that things that people associate as inanimate or unthinking objects have consciousness, such as a tree?
Well, yeah, I would say that the cells in the tree, for sure, have their own cellular kind of consciousness. Now, it's a question of whether or not a tree is a unified organism or a society of individual cells. But I would not at all be surprised if we ever devise and develop the technology or the ability to decide whether any other being is conscious, for us to discover that, yes, in fact, trees and other plants have consciousness. Certainly the cells of the plants do have their own degree of consciousness. And I say certainly because I am quite certain that's the only way that we can account for the fact that we are conscious, that we are made up of atoms and molecules, and so are plants, and so is everything that is alive, and indeed some aspects of the world that are not alive also are made up of molecules and atoms, and they would have their own molecular consciousness or atomic consciousness. We're made up of that stuff, and if we're made up of that stuff and we have consciousness, the only way to account for the fact that we are embodied beings that have consciousness is to make the assumption that whatever we are made of at every level must itself have some degree of consciousness going on, some ability to be aware and to make choices. Otherwise, it's inexplicable how come we, as embodied beings, have the ability to make choices and are aware and can know the world around us. So I feel quite confident in saying that consciousness does go all the way down, and that and clearly consciousness is not something just unique to humans, to humanity.
Am I gathering correctly that you don't associate consciousness with the brain? You associate consciousness with the individual atomic level.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not denying the fact that there's an intimate relationship between the brain and consciousness. I mean, we certainly know a lot from neuroscience to show that that's the case, and we don't even have to be neuroscientists to know that. If we go out of the town and drink a little bit too much at night, then the next morning we feel the effects of that. We feel how the physical world, something happening in our brain, can affect our state of mind. And the reverse happens, that we might have the flu or something, which is something, again, affecting our brain, and that affects our consciousness. So it works both ways. Definitely there is an intimate relationship between the brain and consciousness. But what I'm saying is that the brain is not the producer of consciousness. That consciousness is not just confined to the brain, that every cell in our body has some degree of consciousness. We can talk of embodied consciousness or somatic consciousness, as well as the brain's consciousness. So the brain definitely has consciousness, but it's not only confined to the brain. That's the point that I like to make.
What is it?
I'm not saying get rid
of
the brain. Go ahead. Sorry, Patrick. Go ahead.
No. I understand. I find it personally helpful, Christian. You know, when I become enchanted with my entire being from head to toe, when I can find the mystery and the marvel in my entire being at every cell, rather than just my head.
Yeah.
You know, I feel much more connected and powerful if I think that there's intelligence in every fiber of my body.
Absolutely. And one of the phrases that I use when I'm teaching consciousness studies is to encourage people to learn to feel their thinking. And what I mean by that is most of the time in our culture, in our society, indeed in our educational system, we are trained to think our thoughts, and that's very useful. But it's also a very limited way of using our mind, our intelligence, that we can also learn to feel our thinking. And by that I mean is to actually literally pay attention at every moment to what's going on in our bodies, what sensations are bubbling up through our bodies, and to notice how literally the feelings in our bodies give rise to the thoughts that we have. When we do that, our thinking has a very different quality to it. When we learn to feel our thinking becomes grounded in our bodies. And it has a greater wisdom to it, a greater depth of authenticity, a greater clarity of creativity. It's a way of thinking and communicating from the heart, from the soul, that is embodied rather than the abstractions of just thinking our thoughts. But feeling our thinking is an important distinction from just thinking our abstract thoughts.
It's a step up. What I heard you say is that if you're paying attention to the feeling in your body, and then begin noticing that the feeling in your body actually prompts the thoughts that you're having. Are you suggesting
yeah.
it's a good way to that the process of that self-awareness changes, increases the quality of your thoughts?
Well, it does, and it also connects us more directly to reality. That here's something that the people aren't always aware of is that when we have thoughts or beliefs about something, every thought is an interpretation of an experience, of a feeling. At every moment, we are having an experience. And we don't even have to do anything about that. It just comes with the package of being, sentient being, is that we have experiences at every moment. And then we interpret those experiences just naturally. That's what the mind does. It interprets the experiences that happen. And then we turn those interpretations into thoughts and beliefs. Now, the point about an interpretation or a thought or a belief is that it can be more or less accurate or more or less wrong, more or less inaccurate. However, every feeling is exactly, every experience, every feeling is exactly what it is. You can never have an erroneous experience. Our experience is what connects us to reality. And so by paying attention to our experiences in the moment as they happen, rather than to our thoughts and abstractions, we actually have greater direct connection to reality than through our thoughts or beliefs. So one of the distinctions I like to make in the work that I do is to pay attention to the difference between a belief and an intention. And we can talk a little bit more about that later if you like.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'd like to ask you this. Why consciousness? What is the fascination that you find in a study of consciousness, and what is the application that you are passionate about for consciousness studies?
Great question. I would say that my interest and passion in consciousness pretty much goes back as far as I can remember. I can tell a little story about that if you like. I was probably about 7 or 8 years old, a kid in Ireland, and it was a rainy afternoon, and my brother wasn't home. So I was at home bored, and I picked up my father's old encyclopedia off the bookshelf and started flipping through it and came across an entry on evolution. What caught my attention was a drawing of a dinosaur. And so I began to read, and I understood enough to recognize that not only did I come from my parents, and that they came from their parents, and all the way back to the beginnings of humanity, but that humans ourselves came from some prior ape-like ancestors, and that they had come from some prior mammals, and that the mammals had come from reptiles, and the reptiles from amphibians, and the amphibians from fish, and the fish from jellyfish, and all the way back to what that old encyclopedia called infusoria, and today we would call them bacteria. And so I was astounded.
We would call them what, Christian?
We would call them bacteria.
Oh, okay. All right. Got it.
Single-cell creatures that we were all. So I was astounded to realize that my earliest ancestors were bacteria, these single-cell creatures. But more than that, I wondered, well, where, if life began as these single-cell creatures, and here I am sitting in my room in Ireland wondering about the process of evolution, then where in the great unfolding of evolution did consciousness, did this ability to wonder, first come into being? And so I thought about that, and I read throughout the rest of the article in the encyclopedia, and it didn't address anything to do with consciousness. So I wondered, well, does my dog have this ability? Well, I looked him in the eye, and I was pretty convinced that, yes, he has it. And then I went over and I looked at the cat, and I was pretty convinced that, yes, she has it too. And then I went over to the fish, the goldfish swimming around in the bowl, and kind of went eye to eye with him and wondered, does he have consciousness? And I was pretty sure that, yep, there's consciousness there as well. And then I wondered, well, what about the worms out in the back garden? Do they have consciousness? And I couldn't decide. I thought, well, somewhere between worms and fish, this ability to think, to wonder, to have consciousness came into being. But where exactly did that happen? And so that became the guiding question that basically I turned into my lifelong career, is where in the great unfolding of evolution did consciousness first arise? And so that set me on a path of studying evolutionary biology, psychology, quantum physics, philosophy of mind, Eastern philosophy, spiritual traditions. And eventually I did find the answer to my question. The answer is that consciousness never appeared anywhere in evolution, for the very simple fact that it was there right from the start. It had to be, that consciousness was part of the very fabric of nature, of being itself. Consciousness is intrinsic to matter. I call it the soul of matter, that matter comes tingling with its own spark of spirit at every level. And so then my work became, well, what is the relationship between consciousness, this non-physical, wondrous, magnificent quality that's intrinsic to the cosmos itself? What is the relationship between this non-physical consciousness and the physicality of the natural world around us? And that became the focus of my work, and it's what I've written about in my books and teach in my courses. Essentially, it's called the mind-body connection. How are mind and body connected?
Now, you say that reality bubbles into being in every moment because of our consciousness. What does that mean to you?
Well, to go back to just what I was saying. So when I realized that consciousness did not come into being at any particular point in evolution, that it was actually built into the natural fabric of reality itself. What I recognized is that there's a deep relationship between consciousness and time, and that the way to understand the relationship between the mind and the body, between consciousness and the physical universe, is not how two substances interact in space, which is typically how philosophers over the years have tried to resolve this problem, but actually consciousness and the material world are related in time. And so at every moment we are having an experience now, and as soon as the moment of now happens, if we just pay attention, we recognize it comes and it goes. Almost as soon as it arrives, it's gone. And so every moment of now endures for just a brief instant, just for a brief moment, and then it's replaced by a new moment. the expired moments of experience are what we know of as the embodied world, the physical world. So the physical world is composed of expired moments of experience. They come into being, and then they complete themselves, and they become expired moments of experience. These become the quanta, or the subatomic particles of the physical universe. But as soon as a moment of experience is completed and expires, it's replaced by a new moment of now. One of the things that we can notice very gratefully is that there seems to be no shortage of moments of now, that as soon as one moment of now is completed, it's replaced by a new moment. So there's a natural creativity to reality, to the universe, that brings itself into being at every moment, at every level. And that's what I mean about reality bubbling into being, that you and I at every level are bubbling into being right now, right now, right now, and at every level that's happening. And as soon as we come into being, we then complete that moment, expire, and that becomes our embodied past. I refer to it as past matter, present mind. The mind consciousness is always existing right now in the present moment. The past is what we know of as the objective world, as the physical material world, that we know and experience through consciousness. But that may be just a little bit too abstract and metaphysical for some folks, and so I don't want to get too involved in the technicalities. But essentially, consciousness is the ability that matter has to know and to feel and direct itself. It's intrinsic to the nature of matter.
How does the consciousness study and what you just spoke of, which is an ever-present new nows, rapidly being sort of shelved. I almost pictured like, okay, shelved in reality. Okay, that we'll just shelve that in reality because there's a new moment of now to create from. How does this is this empowering? You know, from your perspective, how does that understanding, does that empower you to believe that you're creating your life, or does it inform you about your position in the universe? What is the meaning of that for you?
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what it is. So when we recognize that at every moment we are literally creating ourselves into being, that the deepest essence of who we are is creativity. That's at the core of existence, is at the core of who we are is creativity. And that means that we actually have the power of choice. That at every moment, when we not only do our expired experiences kind of form this trail that is our past, that is always there with us, that from the moment of our birth to this very moment now, everything that has happened in our past is continuously streaming into this present moment. This present moment is the growing tip of our past. And in fact, it goes all the way back to the Big Bang and perhaps even before that. So one thing we can recognize is that our childhood continuously lives with us. The pressure of the past is continuously streaming into the present. However, we don't feel all of that at every moment. We have to be selective about how much of the past do we allow into each particular new moment. So there's a creative selection that happens in terms of what we allow, what we filter from the past to actually form who we are in the present moment. But besides that, at every moment every moment comes into being shrouded in a cloud of possibilities. Every actuality, everything that actually exists, is surrounded by a halo or a cloud of possibilities. Otherwise, nothing could ever happen. Everything would just be static. So this cloud of possibilities, now we need at every moment to choose, and we do at every moment, we choose among the possibilities that face us in every moment. Right now, we can go left, we can go right, we can go up, we can go back. We make choices at every moment among the possibilities that confront us. And it's the power to make a choice among the possibilities and to then integrate those with what we select from our past is what determines our path through life, that we have the creative power to make the choices to realize the possibilities that surround us at every moment and to make those actual in the next moment. That's a long way of explaining, of talking about the phrase that many people in our work are involved in, which is, what is the process from intention to manifestation. Well, that's what I've just been describing. It's the process of making choices among the possibilities that surround us at every moment, plus choosing from our past what we actually bring into the present moment. The combination of choosing from the possibilities and from our past is what opens up the next step that we take on our path through life, and that's where our creative potency lies. We have that power at every moment. We are making choices, and so in the work that I do, and as far as I can see, the work that you do at Life Path Unlimited is to encourage people to consciously make choices about the possibilities that we choose, the paths that we choose to follow.
I take away from what you just said, sort of the visual image that perhaps we just simply live in possibility space. And, you know, you really put it nicely in that it's almost like a halo, you think you said a halo around our head, like just a matrix of options saying anyone is there for you. You could, like you said, you can go any direction, you can do anything you want. They are all created paths the minute you choose. Yeah. They reside in, which I believe we're talking quantum physics now, which is a quantum physics reality, correct? That what they found is that an atom or an electron or a positron or something exists in all states, as far as they can tell, until somebody looks at it, and then it locks down a choice, as if it locks down a choice and says, okay, well, that's the choice made, so that's what I'll be, but I could have been anything else.
Yeah. Well, that's what's one of the exciting things is that for the first time in the history of science, in quantum physics, they have recognized that they can no longer ignore consciousness. That in quantum physics, what they recognize is that every quantum event, before it actually happens, is in a state of probabilities, of possibilities, that they describe mathematically in something called the quantum wave function, and that quantum reality exists in what they call these superimposed states, that all these possibilities coexist in this realm, in this halo of possibilities at every moment. And it's only when an observer observes the quantum system do all those possibilities collapse down into one actuality that becomes an electron or a proton or some subatomic particle. It's only when the quantum event is observed do those possibilities collapse into an actual particle. Now, what that means is that to be an observer necessarily means a conscious observer. Observation without consciousness is not observation. So basically what the quantum physicists have recognized is that for quantum reality to manifest from potential into actuality requires consciousness. That in some way, they still don't know quite how to explain this, but they recognize it's happening, but in some ways it's as if consciousness is reaching into this domain of possibility and of probability and plucking one actuality through an act of choice out of that halo of possibilities and turns that into the next moment of actuality. And those then become the building blocks of the world around us, of the natural world, of nature, indeed, of evolution and everything that exists around us. That's what we've learned from quantum physics, and it's what I've been talking about in terms of process philosophy. So those two come together, and one of the other interesting aspects of this is that we recognize that this same vision of the nature of reality is something that has been known for millennia in some Eastern spiritual traditions, and particularly Buddhism. That they have a very similar description of the nature of reality as something that is bubbling into being at every moment, and that there is an act of choice and intentionality through consciousness that brings reality into being. And that's who
we
are.
After this call, I've got a 30-minute walk from my hotel down to the area where I'm performing tonight, and I'm in a brand new city, and there's something about being in a brand new city, I've already felt that last night, that kind of gives you a heightened awareness of where you are, a more present sense, because I've never been here before. But if you would, because I think this could be helpful to all of us have somewhere to go today. When I'm on that walk from point A to point B, and when I spend the rest of my time in the coffee house before I go perform, what would you suggest that I do during the next 4 hours to play with this material.
Experience it on
a deeper level.
Yeah. So one of the things that I do is whether I'm walking through a city or a park or through the woods out in nature, is I pay attention to my own worldview, which is the idea that consciousness goes all the way down. In other words, that consciousness is everywhere around me. And so when I walk through the world with that awareness, I am now attuned to what I would call the intelligence of the world surrounding me. I talk of our bodies as meaning processors, that our bodies are literally picking up messages from the world around us. That's what bodies do. They're like antennas, all constantly on the alert for picking up messages from the world around us. And then the body processes those messages into meaning that then show up as intuitions and creative insights. So if we cultivate that awareness that we are literally walking through a world that is tingling with its own intelligence and is reaching out to us, communicating to us at every moment in all kinds of forms, we will then experience ourselves living in a very, very different reality from the standard reality that we are educated and accustomed to believe that we're surrounded by a world of dead matter. That's not the case. I'm saying that's not the case at all. We are surrounded by a world that is tingling with information, tingling with meaning, tingling with intelligence, and that it's constantly communicating with us. The indigenous peoples have known this from time immemorial. It was part of the wonderful message in the recent movie Avatar, that nature itself tingles with the spark of spirit and is constantly communicating with us. That's what I would suggest you do when you go on your walk, is to cultivate your own atavar mind, your own awareness of the fact that the world that you are walking through is a world that is constantly communicating with you, and that wisdom of the communication is in your body. And so by paying attention to what you're literally feeling in your body as you walk through the world, I think you will experience the world in a very different way.
I love it. That's exactly what I needed. Thank you. And what I especially love about that is, I've already experienced that my life is better to the degree that I understand that I am in an infinitely magical, awesome, based the actual definition, not the slang awesome, but the awesome reality that this universe is. So, you have a phrase, and this is a jump, Christian, but you have a phrase somewhere in your material that really caught my attention. It said, "Live beyond belief."
Uh-huh. Yes. Yeah. So this goes back to what I was talking earlier about that every moment we have an experience, and here's the thing. If I was to ask you, when does consciousness happen? When does experience happen? The answer is right now, right now, right now. And then I ask you, when does reality happen? Well, coincidentally enough, it's right now, right now, right now. So consciousness, experience, and reality coincide right now in this very moment. And we don't have to do anything about that. It's just the way reality is built. Now, as soon as we have an experience in this moment, we automatically interpret that, we turn it into a thought. And so thoughts, it's like we freeze frame the moment of experience, and then we collect these frozen fragments of consciousness that are our thoughts, and then we hook them together in certain ways that become our beliefs and belief systems. So what that means is that beliefs are made of these frozen fragments of consciousness. They're made of thoughts. But every thought is about a moment of an expired experience, a moment that is no longer. It's a moment ago. As soon as that moment completes itself, it's replaced by a new moment right now. And so our thoughts are always behind the ball. They're always a moment ago. They're never actually in touch with reality as it actually is. Our thoughts are records or recordings of reality as it was a moment ago or many moments ago or many years ago. So our thoughts are always rooted in the past. And since our beliefs and our belief systems are made up of our thoughts, Our beliefs are always likewise rooted in the past. So beliefs do not connect us with reality. Just because we believe something doesn't mean it's true, as no doubt we've all discovered at some point in our lives, that just because we believe something, it didn't turn out to be true. So having a belief and being attached to a belief, I'm saying, is not really a good method for navigating our way through the world, for connecting with reality. A much more appropriate and much more effective way of connecting with reality is, rather than getting tied up in our beliefs and our belief system, but is to actually return our awareness, our attention, to the moment of experience as it's happening right now. Literally, what is happening in your body right now? What are the sensations flitting through and bubbling up through your body? Pay attention to that. That's what connects us to reality, and that's what I mean by experience beyond belief. If we can begin to cultivate a greater awareness of what actually is going on in our experience, rather than seeing the world through the filters or the lens of our belief systems, we will have a much more direct connection to reality and can then make much more effective choices. So it's, the relationship between choice and manifestation. The difference between...
Beliefs are very, very, they're very much, they're thinking based on a reality that no longer exists. I mean, it might happen to match, but they have nothing to do with the present moment. And I was going to say from what you said that to me what I gather is that beliefs, if you're really living in that and from that belief, then you, by definition of what you just explained, you've cut yourself off from the possibility space.
Exactly right. That's exactly what happens, yes. Yes, so by living according to our beliefs, we are exactly right. We have just blocked out our awareness of the possibilities, which then reduces our ability to make choices that actually can be aligned with our values and our goals and aims and intentions in life. An intention is very different from a belief. See, I'm not denying the power and the potency of consciousness. I'm just saying that consciousness is much more potent when we act from intention rather than from a belief. And intention is the natural expression, you could call it the expression of the soul. An intention is the creative expression of the soul, of the body's natural intelligence. And that's what connects us with reality, not a belief. An intention is a creative act in the moment, whereas a belief is the residue of these frozen fragments of moments that are no longer happening, but have completed themselves.
Did you say that intention is the creative impulse of the soul?
Yes.
You say creative impulse from the soul in the present moment?
Yeah. That's how I would define intention. Literally,
so in your life, do you set intentions?
Yes.
Now how does that look? That means that you tune into a present moment and into how you're feeling in that moment.
Yes.
I don't want to put words in your mouth. How do you work an intention?
So by cultivating the awareness of being actually in the moment of experience, and rather than being our thoughts, our belief system, but actually paying attention to what am I actually experiencing at this moment. When I pay attention to my experience, I'm now in touch with what I truly value most deeply in life. I'm in touch with my aims, with my values, and then I can, from that, let my intention express itself naturally into the world. Now, this brings up what I would consider to be the $64 trillion question in spiritual practice, in psycho-spiritual investigations, is who or what is creating or making the intention? And it seems to me that when I make an intention, that actually what is probably more likely happening, it's not that I am making the intention, but that in some way, this may sound grandiose, but I actually mean it, that in some way, the universe, the cosmos, whatever you want to call it, is expressing itself, its own intelligence through me in that moment, that for me to create an intention is really me opening up myself to be a channel for this higher purpose to express itself through me. And then I can align my own individual being with that intention, and to the degree that my own being and my aim is aligned with this greater impulse pouring through me, then my intentions have power and effectiveness. It's quite possible for us to create an intention that's out of alignment with the greater intentions of the cosmos, of the universe, or the divine, whatever we want to call it. I like to call it the creative ultimate. If our personal intention is aligned with the intention of the creative ultimate, then we have the power of the universe behind us.
That is the $64 billion question, you know, whether it's life entirely and totally by our design, and the mechanism is set to just express whatever it is that we want to create, which sort of really falls firmly into the, you know, the current faddish way of speaking about, you know, the law of attraction. I feel safe to say that the way the law of attraction is expressed almost everywhere you go is, no, you're designing absolutely everything, end of story. I've had trouble, a lot of trouble with that theory, you know.
Yeah.
When what you, you know, although I cannot deny the difference in my life depending on the consistent states of my, you know, the consistency toward the state of my feelings, that to the degree that I'm feeling bad, it does seem like then I'm going to attract in a lot of bad things. You know, increasingly the amount of bad things. But nonetheless, you said something that was very, very eye-catching, ear-catching, heart-catching, mind-catching to me. And that was when you said, it seems to be that perhaps we live in a universe where we have the ability to open ourselves to this creative force that will come through. And if we can be a channel to that, we are supported by the, in an almost magical way, by the universe. Now, what's fascinating to me about that is how many great artists have come forth in the world and, you know, opened up their books, their journals, and said, that's how I create, that I create by opening myself as a channel and something comes through. And, you know, we're told anywhere we look at great art, that is usually the behind-the-scenes explanation for where this great art comes from. So, by anecdotal sort of artistic evidence, there does seem to be this possibility that the universe can send intentions through us or create through us.
Yeah.
Personally speaking, I'll just say that feels much more like my map of reality. That,
yeah.
I can be one of two ways. I can be Patrick Combs making it up on my own, without any consciousness or awareness of opening a channel, and I can get some, you know. And I would have to say I get lesser results than in,
yeah,
those moments when I say, I'd rather this not come from me because I feel far less capable. I'd rather be an open channel and see what comes through, and I just offer myself as a vessel. And then I feel very much like things can come through.
Yeah, yeah. To take the position that we are individuals that can carve our own path through life willy-nilly is to ignore the fundamental reality that everything is interconnected. Therefore, if everything is interconnected, whatever intention that I am making has got to somehow or other align itself with the gazillions of other intentions that have been made by all the gazillions of other sentient beings that I share this universe with. So there's a kind of democracy, a democratic process that takes place in the universe where everyone gets to vote. And what happens is the collective choice of all the sentient beings at every moment that then expresses itself as the universal intention. So yes, we do get to vote. We do contribute to the process. But we are not the creators of reality. We are co-creators in reality. We participate in the creation of reality. We do that dance, but we don't dance alone. And we cannot dance alone. And to be open to the impulse, to the influx of the intelligence of the choices being made by all sentient beings around. And by all sentient beings, I don't just mean human beings. I literally mean all sentient beings. To go back to what I said earlier, is that consciousness goes all the way down. So every molecule, every cell, every atom that surrounds us is making its own choices, is expressing its own intentions and intelligence at every moment. And we are participating in that chorus, in that symphony. And if we attune ourselves to that, then we have the power not just of our own individual choice at every moment, but the power of the symphony of choices that we are in harmony with at every moment. That's a very different way of being in the world. And it does, it, as you described, it is what happens in great art, that artists are aware that in some ways it's not just their own little self that is the creator of this, but that in some ways they are literally channels for the creativity that's coming from somewhere, ultimately from the entire universe, from the creativity of the universe itself. So as creative beings, and we are all creative beings at every moment, that's just the fundamental nature of who we are. We are channels for expressing the creative impulse of the universe at every moment. And to be aware of that and to cultivate that gives us power.
That for me seems to be at least probably my greatest insight or takeaway, if you will, from this call, is I find a repeating pattern in what you're saying, you know, a repeated message in what you're saying that seems to say, you know, walk through this world. With an increased awareness of this connection between your body, which is a vessel of the ability to discern meaning from the embedded consciousness and intelligence of every single sentient thing that you're surrounded by everywhere you go, and I'm presuming that it's from that world relationship, that relationship with the world, that you're suggesting we meet with the most magic and the most intelligence and the best intention, because somehow our body is making better meaning out of what is really possible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, beautifully said. Thank you for summarizing it.
Well, as opposed to, see, you said something that was, you know, that I felt triggered through my body, you know, when you said, look, we don't create our reality, you know, and I almost felt challenged because I'd say, well, you know, that's very difficult for me to intellectually, it's very simple for me to understand, and I have life experience that has always suggested there's no way that we're the sole creator of all this reality, that we're co-creating in some way, and yet I still have all this programming and all this desire that says, no, I'm more powerful to the degree that I feel I create my reality. So, you know, so this rose up inside me, Christian, that said, I can't really accept that I don't create my reality because I'll be a lesser person if I do. Until you followed it immediately with, so plug into the sentient intelligence that surrounds you in the world and make your choices from there. And that gave me, I feel what that will do for me as I try it out to increasing degrees in my life, is that it will replace this desire to feel that I can create it all with an even bigger, an even greater sense of feeling of place and power and harmony with this universe. Well, as I said, that is sort of a more powerful, more greater, better. I've run out of words.
No, I'm with you.
You're saying try this model. Try this model of being connected with the infinite sentient intelligence everywhere you go.
Yeah.
And see if you don't at all mind being a co-creator of reality if you're not a better creator for it.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, I mean, For people to be attached to the notion that we are the sole creators of our life rather than the co-creators of our lives, in my experience, that is very isolating and limiting. My own preference is not that somehow it's all up to me, but to recognize that I am in this with everyone else and that we are all in this together. And again, when I say all, I mean all sentient beings, not just human beings. And for me to recognize that, not to deny my own potency, my own agency, my own power of creativity, I definitely have that. We all have that. But then the question is, and remember, my background is in philosophy, so I ask these questions. I say, well, where did my ability to be creative come from? Well, clearly, it could only have come from the universe itself. That if I have the ability to create, it means that the universe has provided me with the ability to create, and that therefore the universe has the ability to create my ability to create. And so my creativity is always, if you like, a fractal of the creative ultimate itself. And for me to acknowledge that doesn't diminish my sense of creativity. It actually roots it, deepens it into this effectively infinite source of creativity. I feel much more empowered and at peace, and can relax into my empowerment when I allow my creativity to be the expression of the greater creativity of the universe itself, of the world that surrounds me.
There's a wonderful book called The War of Art. Have you ever read it?
The War of Art? No, I haven't.
Yeah, it's not The Art of War. It's The War of Art.
Who wrote that?
His name's going to escape me right now. And
I can check it out.
The War of Art. But I bring it up because it's written by a man who has written many novels and also a book that many people on the call have heard of and are fans of called The Legend of Bagger Vance.
Oh, great movie.
The Legend, right? In The Legend of Bagger Vance, you know, what is the mystical caddy counseling him to do before he swings? You know, none other than stop and really become present to this moment and let the shot find you.
Beautiful, yes.
Let the shot find you, which is what I'm taking, you know, in part, your message coincides with that, which is walk out your door, Patrick, today. And let the intelligence find you. See the field, as he said in Bagger Vance. So I brought up the War of Art came to mind for me. I can see because of that also. But I thought of it specifically because in here he's saying, look, in order to birth your best work, you have got to connect. You've got to open yourself as a channel. So he literally prescribes or he details and writes out exactly what his invitation, his out loud verbal written invitation is every time he sits at his desk to do his work, because he understands he must court those muses. And there's a TED talk that really ties into this too recently. I do not remember the speaker's name, but she wrote the book Eat, Pray, and Love. Are you familiar with the title?
Oh, yes. Elizabeth.
Yes. And so, you know, when she came out, and she came out and she confessed, she said, you know, creativity a long time ago used to be firmly understood as a power outside of ourselves. Everybody knew that if you were a great writer, if you had written something great, it's because you had a great muse. She said, so there was far less pressure on the writer because, if you don't like my book, it's because my muse didn't come through. She goes, but somewhere we cut ourselves off and we chose that we were the one and the end all. You know, it all came from just us as an individual. There was nothing else to it. Well, this made it more difficult for the artist because now if you didn't like my second book, it's my fault. But what it really revealed in her confessing this was that here was yet another artist that said, look, it's just, I really believe we're working with something else here. Work with it.
Yeah. I saw that TED Talk, too, and I'm very, very impressed by that. And if anyone listening to this call has not seen it, check it out. Of course, I can't remember her last name at the moment, but Eat, Pray, Love.
Eat, Pray, Love.
Yeah.
What I'm going to do is take care of a little business. It'll take me 60 seconds out loud. I'll do it verbally out loud. And then, Christian, I'd love to come back to you and ask you to wrap this call with your summarizing or closing thought.
Sure.
And might I say, in advance of that, how quickly this hour went, and how I really appreciate very much, in all sincerity, your willingness to go all the random places I went in the phone call. Your work is so wide and deep and epic that I know there were 1 billion places, an infinite possibility space for where we could have gone, and you just so effortlessly and gracefully went wherever my mind tripped around to, so I appreciate it. I would like to say to everybody on the call that there is no possible way in all, I have all of Christian's four remarkable books. There is no possible way to even come close to scratching the surface of even displaying to you the breadth and the width and the depth of the information that he has put together in his life studies that is all incredibly applicable to your day-to-day life and connects you with the fascination of yourself and the awesome nature of how you are connected to this infinitely intelligent, sentient, and conscious universe. If you wanted to start with a book, you know, the first one that I found just absolutely gripping and easy to read is Consciousness from Zombies to Angels, The Shadow and the Light of Knowing Who You Are, Seven Steps to Greater Awareness. And just, I wholeheartedly recommend, you've got nothing like this book on your, I'm guessing you have nothing like this body of work anywhere sitting on your bookshelf yet. So it is a completely unique and special book. And Christian, what website do people find you at?
Well, there are two. There's thewisdomacademy.org, and then my own personal website, deepspirit.com, and then there's my blog, thewisdomblog.wordpress.com.
Excellent. And what is your latest book, Christian?
Well, the latest book is Consciousness from Zombies to Angels, and it's also Radical Nature, which was my first book, but that has just been reissued in a new edition. So my latest book is also my first book, and coinciding with that is the one you mentioned, Consciousness from Zombies to Angels.
Okay. All right. Well, the business I wanted to take care of is that for those of you who are in Life Path Unlimited, members of Life Path Unlimited, a recording of today's call will be available in your member back office for the next 2 weeks, so is last week's call, should you like to revisit any one of them. All of you, if you're on the line today, you are welcome to comment on this call. If you keyword search the Discovery Series, these calls are part of Life Path Unlimited product, the Discovery Series. If you keyword search the Discovery Series, you'll find we have a discussion group about our home study course, the Discovery Series. If you're in Life Path Unlimited, then we have a group there called Life Path Unlimited. You're welcome to participate in that conversation. If you would just like to find myself on Facebook and comment on the call, you'll find me at facebook.com/PatrickLive. This call was live. My last name is Combs, Patrick Combs. Be sure and join Joe Need and his cast of Life Path Unlimited leaders, and they are there to inspire and give you an epic start to your day, Monday through Friday, and at the same time, 11 a.m. And if you're in Life Path Unlimited, watch your members' back office and your email for details on who next Saturday's guest will be here. And if you're not in Life Path Unlimited but you want to come back for more, just dial in at the same time next Saturday using the same call and information, and we'll see you again there. But today we have been graced by the amazing Christian DeQuincy, the author of Consciousness from Zombies to Angels. And what a call it has been. Christian, thank you on behalf of everybody on the call. Your closing thought that you would send us off with?
Well, I'm going to wrap up with what I call seven steps to knowing who you really are, and in some ways this is a summary of the essence of Consciousness from Zombies to Angels. Basically, there are seven steps. The first is to accept that our beliefs are natural, that we naturally have beliefs. And the second is to realize that every belief is a mental habit, a frozen fragment of consciousness. Step three is to recognize the origin of our beliefs, that all our beliefs always begin in our experience that we then interpret and turn into beliefs. Step four is to focus on feelings in our bodies, to learn to feel our thinking and to recognize how our feelings connect us with messages from the world around us. Step five, and this one is probably the most important, stop believing your beliefs. We can't help having beliefs. We don't have much choice about that. But we can choose whether or not we believe our beliefs to be true. So step five is to stop believing your beliefs. Step six is to cultivate being the witness. Who is observing your thoughts? Who is the witness of the thoughts that are flitting through your consciousness? That's who you are. You are the witness that unifies self and world. And the final step, which probably is most important of all, is I encourage everyone to spend more time in what I call sacred silence, just being with yourself, either by yourself or sitting or being with people in community. Just be who you are at every moment and don't feel the need to always talk. To learn to speak from the silence rather than speaking to fill the silence. Thank you all, and thank you, Patrick, for this wonderful conversation, and I look forward to further opportunities for us to get together.
Well, you will most certainly be invited back to a Beyond Discovery call. Be a welcome guest anytime that you desire. Thank you so much, Christian. Thank all of you for joining us here at Life Path Unlimited. My name is Patrick Combs, and ladies and gentlemen, go forth and be the greatest version of the grandest vision that you've ever had of yourself. And have a great Saturday. This call is a wrap.